Episode 55, Wrath, Part 3 of the Seven Deadly Sins series. Brought to you by Audible.com, over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, including many books by C.S. Lewis, J.R.R. Tolkien, Isaac Asimov, all your favorites. Get a free audiobook of your choice by going to audibletrial.com/strangers, where you can sign up for a free trial that you can cancel at any time, plus get a free audiobook that you get to keep as long as you want. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend's plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to Strangers and Aliens. Once again, I am Steve MacDonald, and again with me are my two cohorts in crime, or not crime, as it were.
I'm Ben Avery, and I am not a criminal. I promise. That's from me to you, listener.
Yes, and I'm Dr. Jace, and I am not a criminal, though I play one on television.
There we go.
And his love for the Dark Knight is criminal.
Yeah, you didn't even like Steve. You brought it up. Not even how many seconds into the show, and you brought it up. Nice,
isn't that good?
You're just trying to head it off. people telling fat jokes about themselves because if they tell the joke, it deflects what they were gonna hear from other people. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping now that Justice League does go in the Dark Knight direction, then we can continue to beat that game for.
Can you imagine? Because anytime we talk about Justice League, in that case, we have to talk about the history. Yeah. And there's that background that's just right there.
Wouldn't have to talk about the history. I mean, you wouldn't have to.
No, but it'd be hanging there.
We definitely would have to, Steve. Especially
you could hang it. You could hang anytime. It there. Just like the Joker is hanging there at the end of episode 2. And he's, I guess, just still hanging there.
Steve, why does this make you so angry?
I just have this wrath when it comes to that whole trilogy. I don't know what it is.
Wow, what a seamless segue we just made.
Yeah, what a great transition there.
This is episode 3 of our Seven Deadly Sins sub-series that we are doing as part of the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
We know which one Steve struggled with.
We are talking about Wrath. And as usual, the way we're going to approach it is we will talk about examples. First of all, talk about the definition of the word and just kind of hash that out. Then we'll talk about examples from sci-fi and fantasy of both the sin and its opposite virtue. And then talk about some of the spiritual teachings you can find in the Bible and then personal applications to ourselves. I think that's everything. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I guess.
All right. So, let's talk about wrath. What is wrath? Dr. Jace, go.
Wrath. Well, it's the title in the second Star Trek movie.
That's not a definition.
Yeah,
really.
That's really not a definition.
And well, it's part of the title.
Definition.
What?
Well, when he asked you for the definition, what did you think?
Well, I told you, it was a line of thought. The first thing I thought of was Wrath of Khan.
But what's the definition?
The definition of wrath. Okay, the definition of wrath is strong, stern, fierce anger, deeply resentful indignation, vengeance, or punishment as the consequence of anger.
That's the definition. Okay. How do you personally define it, Steve? You have a personal definition that's not dictionary?
Personal definition of wrath.
Yeah.
I when I describe it to my kids, I describe it as sort of like an anger that has been able to roll a bit. You know, it's been able to stay angry for a long time and for the right reason. In most cases, when usually I'm talking about the, you know, the wrath of God.
But we're talking about wrath as a sin, which right, obviously yeah. is not the wrath of God.
Right. But so, when I talk about well, it, it's usually anger magnified. Sort of like how joy is happiness magnified. Wrath would be anger magnified.
Basically,
or like wrath is, or like wine is grape juice plus. Is that what you're saying?
Grape juice plus.
In my mind, wrath is like the vengeance, taking, you know, everything out on people. Wrath.
Yeah.
I mean, it's angry.
I kind of go along with that. I look at wrath as out of control anger, or anger that controls you.
Oh, I was going to say anger in action. That's how I was going to. It's like anger. See, I don't know. Anger, there's okay anger, but anger
right.
with a megaphone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about anger, you can't just dismiss anger as a negative. It's a negative feeling as far as, like, if you're feeling, it's a bad feeling. You don't necessarily like anger, but it can produce positive results, and it actually is it's a positive response to negative things sometimes. But when you're looking at what anger can do, it can easily go one way or another. And wrath, I think, can go one way or another, but we're talking about wrath as the sin, which obviously is not the wrath of God. But could be the wrath of Khan, which I guess we'll talk about. What do you guys think about its opposite then? Or what do you think the opposite actually is? I've seen a couple different definitions for what the heavenly virtue could be. One is patience, and then another is forgiveness, and then another is composure. And I'm not sure. I don't think I like any of those. But
is
maybe
composure one of the virtues, really?
Well, that's the thing, is the virtues weren't codified quite as strongly as, like, the seven deadly sins. The seven deadly sins that we have now that have been, you know, through different lists and stuff that were kind of put into stone, basically, by the Catholic Church that we have then, they're pretty much, it's there, you know? They're in stone on the hallway in the subway for Billy Batson to walk by every time he wants to go visit the wizard, you know.
Right.
But
it seems to me like, I mean, this is could be the opposite of a lot of ills, but it seems to me that the opposite of wrath is love, as far as 1 Corinthians, because love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it's not proud, it does not dishonor, it does not hold any records of wrong or not easily angered. So to me, you know, if I'm thinking wrathful thoughts, what is the opposite of me being wrathful? And that's me being loving.
Yeah, and that's taking the word wrath as a sin.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, because I do know that there are some people who have a hard time justifying the image of the wrathful God with the image of the loving God. And
right.
He's the same God. And he's still loving you when he has his wrath. Or would you guys disagree with that?
Well, no. I mean, because when you're saved, when you're a Christian, you are protected from the wrath of God. That's different than the wrath of God that brings judgment. There's a difference between discipline, as if he was disciplining you or I, like he would a loving son, a father would discipline a loving son.
Yeah.
Versus the wrath and judgment of those who don't know the Lord, that's a different dynamic.
Yes, but would you still say that God loves those people that he has wrath against?
It's tricky because, you know, God is love. So any love
Yeah, but that's a noun. We're talking about
right.
We're talking about this adjective describing God as a loving. Right.
Well, the problem is that
and the verb God loves you.
Well, right.
We would say that for God so loved the world that mm-hmm. would include the saved and unsaved. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would argue, and many would argue, that it's because of God's love that there has to be the wrath and justice part. Because, you know, say, you know, if anybody. If you take a married couple and they have kids and someone were to go kill those kids and a society that says, oh, well, we're going to let the murderer off, that is not a loving culture. That is a very unloving culture, but it's love that brings about justice to protect and to bring about judgment on wrong. So, I think that it's because God is love that there has to be justice and judgment. We're just grateful that we actually serve a gracious God, but he is just.
Yeah, he is just, but I do want to, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't nail you guys down on this. I want to say explicitly that I believe God loves even those who he punishes. And well, even when he's bringing down his wrath on, like, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah or something like that, he loved those people. And
right.
I want to make sure.
I said John 3:16, for God so loved the world. He loves the world. That doesn't negate the fact that he's angry and not happy with much of the world.
Yeah, he hates unrepentant sin. So anyone that is left in that when they die, you know, that's what hell is for.
But has he stopped loving the people that are in hell?
No. Well, that's a.
It's a gradation type of a thing.
I don't think it is, but we'll move on from there then.
Okay. That'd be interesting to dig into.
It would be interesting to dig into. Of course, I don't know if we could in a science fiction fantasy sense, but...
The problem is because then, you know, whether or not God loves people in hell is it's kind of a, you know, where everyone would be giving their opinion on that.
I can understand an opinion that goes against that and says that he's not, but I think you'd have to take it into some weird theological places, like, well, hell is the absence of God kind of thing. And how can he love something that's not in his, I don't know.
I think hell is just as far away as you can be from God. You know, when it talks about the fire and the, you know, the darkness of it and everything, I sort of imagine if some person was being pushed away at, like, as fast and as hard as it possibly could be, but still kept alive, you know, the friction would be just massive amounts of pain, and it would be so far from the light that it would be dark. So it would be like this burning darkness, and still, you know, it's just, you're kept alive. Well, so that's sort of how I envision it. It might be completely different.
C.S. Lewis pretty much says that hell is pretty much what we have chosen. We have chosen. It's not a matter of choosing between God and the devil. It's a matter of choosing God or ourselves. So basically, C.S. Lewis talks about, you know, how we basically just get what we chose in our life. So to me, the argument or the question of whether or not God loves people in hell, well, people can argue about it, but it doesn't change anything. People in hell are still in hell. So I like to focus on the things that we can actually change and work on right now.
And I look at God's love, though, as an unchangeable constant.
Sure.
And that he is going to love you no matter what. And you can choose yourself. You can choose to not accept him at all. And he's still going to love you, even as you get the natural consequence that comes from that. You know, that. So that, I mean, that's, I guess that's my opinion, but that's kind of how I envision that perfect love that God has.
But then you have to deal with scriptures that say God hates people that do this, and God hates, I mean, it's kind of a big conversation. But I agree with you, Ben, that God is always loving. That the problem is that just some people won't change their mind and have become an enemy of God.
And I have a feeling that when we get to the kind of the spiritual application of things at the end, because I actually wrote down, what about the wrath of God? I think we might be coming into this question a little bit again on the back end, but can we move into something a little more happy and fun to talk about now?
Sure.
I didn't mean to press you guys on that. I just the uncomfortable silence that happened after I asked the question, I felt like, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? So okay, so wrath I look at as out of control anger. Jace, you were kind of talking about it as being anger, but that with that, what?
I'm sorry, maybe part of the silence was I was thinking, gosh, I haven't been asked that since I was in like high school. Does God hate people in hell? You know, those types of questions.
Yeah.
That, you don't really think about, or you think about at certain points in your life, but I was just processing, gosh, when was the last time someone asked me that? Anyways.
Okay, so I kind of look at out of control anger as the definition of wrath, and along with that, Dr. Jace, you were saying that you saw wrath as anger in action. Steve, you said anger plus, or anger, what was the word you used? Not plus, but...
what did I say? Magnified?
Magnified, yeah. Hey, should we do a prize for anyone who could tell us what the Grape Juice Plus line comes from? Steve? You know what line it comes from, right? You don't? Oh, we might have to do a contest with that. Not right now, though.
I have known it in the past. I'm trying to remember it.
Let's not worry about
it. Google it.
Okay, so looking at those definitions, they all fit nicely with each other. I think we're all on the same page. So what are some examples from sci-fi and fantasy that you can think of? And I think that when we think of when we think of wrath, we are going to be automatically talking about its opposite, which is going to be kind of that patience or that love.
Right.
So Dr. Jace, sorry I cut you off there, but if you would please state again. The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, I got to get that in there.
Which is the first thing that popped in my mind. Steve, first thing that popped in your mind or not?
Probably, yeah. Yeah. But I didn't, I immediately just sort of pushed it aside because I knew it would be, I knew someone might bring it up.
Well, here's the question that I had, though, as soon as I thought about that title, Dr. Jace and Steve. Does Khan really have wrath in that movie? Is it that out of control anger, or is it maybe we need to expand our definition of wrath?
Well, you said it was out of control. I said it was.
Or anger that controls. So I guess that's my second part. But
Wasn't it that the one where he was putting like steroid caterpillars in Chekhov's ear?
Yeah. To take control of Chekhov and that other captain.
Yeah, I mean, wrath doesn't have to be. I mean, you know, when you're psychotic and you're taking out the, well, I'll give you an example. You know, when in counseling, you have some people who act out and it's obvious. And then you have some people that it's all internal, but their actions are extremely wrathful. They just do it with a smile. I would say that it's, you know, still out of the same motivation, just as the ones who do it with a smile are a little bit scarier.
Steve? What do you think about Khan?
Well, you know, when I think about it, you know, from hell's heart, I stab at thee, you know, I picture that guy who was left on the planet and just was able to let that anger smolder.
Yeah.
And
Go ahead.
And just to become that wrathful character and just to be able to be so cold, so.
Hello? Steve?
I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yep. It sounded like you got cut off right in the middle of that
I
word.
Think I was waving my hand around and it hit a button on the microphone.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like so cold and in silence.
So cold, so heartless, you know, that he could do the things that he did. Just nasty.
I think I need to expand my definition because there's a smoldering anger there. It's not out of control. It's that smoldering anger that's controlling him.
Yeah, but he is out of control. He seems very controlled, but
it's right under the surface.
Right, but there's a difference. Like, for instance, if someone is, if we're in a room and Ben, you're yelling at the wall and just punching the wall, of course, that looks wrathful. However, if Steve is the one, to me, looks completely calm, but is pulling the strings that is manipulating you under the surface in ways that I don't even know that's causing you. That's also Rappel. He's doing it in an understated way, but it's almost worse. It is worse.
Well, and that's
so with Khan, it's motivated by wrath and revenge because he is upset and he is angry. And besides, it's the name of the title of the film.
Right. But I'm looking at Khan and thinking, it's a great example where you can just see it under the surface. And he is in control, mostly. But then things will get under his skin. You know, and that's honestly, that's the way Kirk wins. It's not the two-dimensional, three-dimensional thinking. It's the, I'm going to, you know, heckle him and tell him, you know, you can't, you try, but you can't, you know. You just keep missing the mark. So, yeah, okay. Khan, great example, great title. And with anything else, I've got one that you guys are not going to, I don't think anyone's going to have this one.
And I would say that I was sitting there the last time I watched him, like, maybe he's just upset because when he was on the original Star Trek show, he looked really silly and it wasn't that great of an episode. So maybe that's why he's very wrathful.
Yeah. Isn't that the one? I'm trying to remember exactly how Kirk won the battle, but the battle in the episode, it's hand-to-hand combat, and Kirk wins because he uses a tool. He gets a stick and hits him on the head with a stick that he pulls out of the control panel. I don't know how that works, but it was there and became like a club.
Yeah.
And it's...
Yeah, and Khan doesn't get to show his chest muscles in the episode, I don't think, you know, like he does in the movie.
Which I have heard are real. I've heard people go back and forth about this. Is that a chest plate? Is that fake? Or is that really his chest? And everyone says it's real. The director in his book says that's his real pecs right there.
He was pretty good shape when he was younger.
He was, how old was he in Wrath of Khan? He was in good shape then. Well, that was Mr. Rourke at that point.
He was younger then compared to when he passed away.
Well, yeah, but
I mean, it's not like he was on Fantasy Island young, but
right. Well, Fantasy Island, he wasn't very young.
Yeah.
He just seems ageless, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. No, he...
His theater, the theater that he helped found was close to where I lived in Hollywood, so I used to go by it all the time.
Ricardo Montalban.
Yes.
All right, so here's one that I am going to guarantee that neither of you thought of. Almost guarantee.
Okay.
Miss Piggy. she's got that veneer of class.
Are we talking Miss Piggy in Lost in Manhattan or
Piggy? No, in the Muppet movie. Miss Piggy in the Muppet movie. Well, in Muppets Take Manhattan too. Steal her purse, and what does she do? She goes on a tear across Central Park.
How's that sci-fi?
It's Muppets. Muppets is sci-fi fantasy.
Okay.
R2-D2 and C-3PO and Chewbacca appeared as themselves on The Muppet Show. So that was the episode that Mark Hamill and Luke Skywalker were both booked for the same episode.
Right.
And they weren't interested in Mark Hamill because all he could do was gargle Gershwin.
That's right.
So.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, so I place Muppets squarely in fantasy and sci-fi.
It's easier for me to do fantasy. I guess sci-fi if you're just talking animals, but it's a Muppet, so it's hard to...
Well, and Gonzo, you know, you have Muppets from Space.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the one.
Which then retcons his entire... Every appearance that Gonzo is in, he's an alien. So that's sci-fi.
Yeah, that's okay, whatever.
There you go. Yeah.
Anyway, Miss Piggy... She has class. She's chic. I mean, she speaks French every once in a while, and sometimes even does it correctly. But you push her buttons, man. You steal her purse. You scramble her frog's brain. She will go kung fu all over your face.
Nice.
She did in all three of the first three movies. Because I remember the climax then to The Great Muppet Caper.
She's famous for it.
Yeah. Miss Piggy. She is the wrathful pig. Can you think of any other examples of wrath from sci-fi fantasy?
What about Mal?
Mal from Firefly?
I was going to say Serenity, but yeah, I was thinking Mal as well.
I was thinking River from Serenity.
River's like all like, you know, yeah, it's mind control. It's not even her real, her emotions. It's how she's programmed.
Yeah, but in the movie when her brother got shot, didn't she just go crazy then?
No, but it was different. This is what she's trained to do. That was more of love than wrath. It just, you know, her actions were violent, but that was out of the love of protecting her friends and her brother. And she was programmed that way. I'd say, because when, basically Mal, I was thinking the exact same thing, Steve, because when he finds out what's really been going on and he tells everyone, I'm prepared to misbehave. And so he goes, it's basically all's on the table. He doesn't care anymore. He's bringing judgment to, this alliance, so to speak.
But again, go ahead.
No, Steve, the reason I was processing it is because, yeah, it's kind of wrathful, but it's also bringing about justice versus just vengeance. So that's why I was kind of debating if it was really wrath or if it was a righteous anger. And I view them differently, righteous anger versus wrath. So I'm not sure on that one.
I think righteous anger is the virtue of wrath, whereas vengeful anger is the sin.
And maybe there's a little bit of both in Mal, because Mal's kind of like the anti-hero, so maybe there's a part of it where it is, you know, because he looks out for his own, but that's it.
Yeah.
And so it's almost as if it's kind of both if you really look at it, I think, because on one hand it is vengeance. He is going to repay these people regardless if it's right or wrong. He's going to bring judgment to them. At the same time, it's as if he's sticking up for what they've done to River and other people that have been close to him and the people that they killed, their friends. So it's almost both. What do you guys think?
I think looking at it, I would lean toward more about the justice than about the vengeance, but I think it is both. That's a turning point for him. To me, that's a turning point for his character arc in the entire series.
Oh, yeah.
Is he, in that moment, he is willing to sacrifice.
Put his butt on the line, finally.
He's willing to stand out and stand up for something bigger than himself.
Right.
You know, I think in a lot of times in, you know, earlier episodes, when he's going after someone who has wronged someone in his group, it's because you've wronged someone in my tribe, so you've wronged me. And in this case, I think he's kind of making some baby steps maybe toward some selflessness.
Yeah.
Maybe. No,
I that's the one that I was debating in my head. I was going back and forth because, you know, in truth, because the way the characters are written in that show is that you've got good motivation and you've got bad motivation, and they're kind of sometimes intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty real to life sometimes, is you have mixed feelings and mixed motivations sometimes.
I have trouble seeing his anger as righteous, though, because when I think of the word righteous, I mean, you know, it just brings that biblical righteousness to mind, and to mix it with, you know, righteousness meaning what he believes is right, it sort of muddies the water there.
But in that whole situation, they're realizing in that movie that basically there's been some terrible wrongs that have happened. And again, I think this is where he starts stepping up and recognizing a moral code beyond just his own.
Yeah, it's kind of like if...
I don't think it's fully righteous.
Well, no, it's not righteous in the biblical sense. But for instance, if you see someone, say you take Joe Schmo, he's in a business, and he thinks he's part of this good business, and all of a sudden he starts to realize his company is not just hurting people, but illegally hurting people. And there's a righteous indignation to bring justice to that situation. It doesn't mean he necessarily did things in a biblical sense, but it is righteous indignation, righteous judgment to bring about somebody has been wrong and he wants it to be righted. So I don't know.
I agree there. I know what you're saying, Steve. I wouldn't never go so far as to say that Mal is a righteous character.
No, not at all. Not by any means.
And I don't think he ever would be.
But that was one step. Like, oh, there's maybe he's one step closer to redemption there somehow.
And I do think he's going to take a step back from that. If there were more stories, he would take a step back from that.
I hope. I have to imagine that there's going to be some other story in that universe told at some point.
Beyond the comics, you mean on screen?
Yeah, I heard a rumor. I saw a thing where, of course, Joss Whedon is always asked about this. They did some kind of reunion thing. I don't know when it was, but they asked because all these different Veronica Mars, people did this Kickstarter campaign to try to do. And so, of course, he's asked, well, if the fans did a Kickstarter campaign for Firefly or Serenity, would that help? And he didn't say no, but of course he's wrapped up with Marvel for the next 3 years or so.
Yeah, I think his answer was kind of saying that, well, we'll see what's there 3 years from now.
Yeah, once I'm done
with Avengers.
And once his face is done with Castle. Yeah. So I'm still crossing my fingers for that. Okay, I've got a character.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay, this is a character which we talk about all the time, but I think a lot, especially depending on what version we talk about him in. In some versions, it seems most of his motivation is wrath, and that is Batman.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote down Batman and Punisher together.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. I wasn't going to give them both away, but
it's kind of the same motivation.
Yeah, exactly.
But is vengeance truly wrath? I mean, when it comes down to it?
I think it's motivation. It's what is your vengeance coming from? I think that probably the best way in English words to delineate is to say there's justice and there's vengeance. Vengeance is a selfish desire for justice. And justice is a greater desire to see, you know, punishment or whatever.
And I think Batman is both. I think there are times that he gets wrapped up in his wrath. And at the same time, there's justice there as well. So it just depends on, you know, I think in The Dark Knight with Christopher Nolan's Batman, I see a lot more wrath. There's justice too, but I see definite strong motivations of wrath as well.
Well, and here's the thing. I was thinking about how in the Batman Adam West universe, they never talk about his actual origin of his parents dying, and I kind of look at him as like he's just doing it just for the fun of it, you know. there's rights that or there's wrongs that need to be righted. I've got the money, I've got the time, I've got the wherewithal, I'm gonna do it. You know, Joker comes into town, I'm gonna put on my costume and I'm gonna take care of him, because you know what, I got nothing better to do.
This is better than playing squash with all those rich snobs.
Exactly. So I said something on Facebook about that, and someone, I can't remember who it was, but one of our listeners said something about how, what did they say? No, I totally lost it. Rats. I'm gonna have to edit that out. But they had this perfect response. They're just off on vacation, and you know, they don't even talk to him anymore, kind of thing, because he's just off doing his thing, just for fun. And he's out for justice. He is out. That Batman is so earnest.
He's like Superman, basically.
Yeah, he is a Boy Scout. And he is not out for vengeance. Except for maybe in the random episode where they've done something to Robin. Or there was the one episode where he got so angry because they had a girl infiltrate the Batcave and she fell into the nuclear generator or something like that.
But who wouldn't be upset about that? I mean, I'd be upset, if someone fell into a nuclear generator.
So that Batman, no. But Michael Keaton Batman in the first Michael Keaton Batman, where he confronts the killer of his parents with Joker, there's wrath there. He's not doing that because Joker's evil. He's doing it because Joker killed his parents. The evil, righting wrongs is secondary. So I think it's a matter of vengeance versus justice. It's motivation.
But is vengeance always... How did you describe it? You said it was...
I am not describing vengeance as always motivated by selfishness. I'm saying you kind of have to look at it that way, though.
Okay.
Well,
vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Yeah. That's a righteous vengeance, but that's more justice. That's justice. That's not selfishly motivated vengeance.
We're talking about bringing about some sort of judgment or justice upon a person. The thing that delineates whether or not that's right or wrong is the motivation behind it. Whatever word gymnastics we want to put on it, when we're talking about wrath, we're usually talking about a negative connotation. Unless you're God, it's usually a bad thing.
And that's why we... it's hard because you can have wrath and still be sinless, I think. But that wrath usually comes from a selfish place.
Right.
And Punisher more so. Definitely.
Yeah, Punisher's a whole other level.
The story I want to see someone do with Punisher, or maybe I want to do someday if I ever get a chance, is, his family was killed in this, these criminals kill his children. I would like to see Punisher have to deal with some of the collateral damage that comes from his war on crime and realize that he has created fatherless children all over the place because he has gone down and he's not just taking out the crime bosses. He's taking out anyone, who's there. And, for him to take a look at the collateral damage that his wrath has caused.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, you got anything to add? Any
well, I don't know if this is. I don't know
character?
If this is. If this could be. I mean, in some ways, I'm forgetting the guy's name. Pulp Fiction. It's not. It's not technically, sci-fi or fantasy, but it exists in a fantastic world that. The guy who wrote it, whose name I'm blanking on.
Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, if you're going to use Quentin Tarantino and want to go more fantasy sci-fi, Kill Bill would be, seems to me, a little bit more of a fitting.
And Django, I haven't seen it, but that seems to be based on a lot of...
Yeah, I didn't see Kill Bill either. But I'm just thinking, when Jules quotes the passage in Ezekiel...
That's not really an Ezekiel.
But. But still it's and I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger. And it's sort of like, that's sort of like wrath. That's God's wrath there, but he's applying it sort of to himself in some ways. I mean, he sort of mixes it up a lot.
I don't think any of that is actually scripture. I think there's a lot of scripture type phrases in there.
Yeah. But I think he just muffed it.
Well, if we're going to bring that in, then you can bring in almost every angry man. I'm going to get you back movie out there. You've got Get Carter,
Death Wish,
Payback, Man on Fire. I mean, you've got all these Kill Bill where it's just like, okay, I'm just going to go kill everyone because I'm really ticked off until I get what I want.
How about, you just made me think of this, Dr. Jace, but I know you guys have something to say about this. What about Inigo Montoya? He is seeking vengeance his whole life, consumed by it. And when it's done, he doesn't know what to do with himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, if that is wrath, that's definitely the simmering wrath.
And I think that's something where, we haven't talked about this, but after the wrath is satisfied, what is there? And a lot of times it's the emptiness.
I was going to say, does that is there, when you act out of wrath, is there a reprieve from that?
Yeah. When I was at, not film school, but when the writing program called Act One in L.A., the Butchers, they co-wrote, or they wrote the first draft of Batman Forever, and they came and spoke to us, and they talked a little bit about the rewrite that happened on Batman Forever, and they said, you can't fix Batman, because, you know, he has to be driven by something. And so once you allow him to confront the person who killed his parents, what is there for him to do? His whole motivation is gone.
Yeah.
And then my friend Brian, he said, well, they say that, but then they did it in their movie. They fixed Batman. Batman Forever fixes him. He faces his fears. So,
wow.
I can't believe no one's mentioned this yet. It was first on my list. I didn't even write down Wrath of Khan because I knew it was going to be coming up and it was the first thing on my head. But the first on my list was the Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
That is the perfect example of anger that controls you rather than you controlling your anger. And in fact, we use that as an example with the kids that I worked with when I was a youth treatment specialist at the home here. And I brought up the Hulk. I mean, the Hulk was them. You know, I'd say, are you being the Hulk right now? Are you letting your anger completely control you, or are you going to control it? And they understood when I was talking about the Hulk. They could kind of reference that, you know, in their mind.
But isn't that more rage, or is that a synonymous?
I don't think it's synonymous, but I think they're very related.
Okay.
Well, I mean, rage is out of control. Anger with, it seems to be no focus. Wrath seems, in my opinion, seems to be targeted, focused at a person or a group of people. There's a focused anger of some sort.
I think rage is unfocused, but it still comes from the same place. Whereas, okay, Bruce Banner, is it David Banner in the TV show?
Yes.
Bruce Banner in the comic, but Banner, whoever, whichever Banner you're talking about, he gets angry because bad guy steps on his foot when they're trying to steal a woman's purse, and he turns into the Hulk and he just starts throwing everything around. And I think it's still wrath, but it's not focused because it's that raging wrath. Whereas, you know, Superman, you know, Lex Luthor beats up Jimmy Olsen and throws him in front of a subway or something like that. So that would be wrath on Superman's part because it'd be targeted against Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Or the subway.
I would almost see, when it comes to that, I would almost see Hulk more of a person of rage. The one character I actually see as a wrathful character is Magneto, in contrast to Professor X's approach. Magneto wants to bring judgment upon the non-mutant population because of what they've been forced to do, and they're inferior in his mind. So he's bringing judgment plus a lot of his own emotional baggage on such. And I think Magneto is a very good example of wrath.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think Magneto fits the mold.
I would see him more as sort of like the agent of wrath, you know, as if when he does what he does, he sees himself as sort of the agency by which the, you know, the humankind is being cleansed. But I wouldn't necessarily see him as a wrathful character.
That's because I don't see wrath as being, is always visually, you're able to see. Some of the most wrathful people I've seen seem calm on the level, but their actions and what they do are extremely wrathful.
And I think it comes down to that kind of vengeance or revenge sensibility. With the Wrath of Khan, you know, maybe a better title of that movie would have been The Revenge of Khan, because he was seeking, in fact, I think that was originally going to be the title, but then they had Star Wars, The Wrath of the, or The Revenge of the Jedi, that was going to be coming out, and they had to change their title. But
was that Return of the Jedi?
Well, they turned it into Return of the Jedi because they realized Jedi don't go after revenge, so that's kind of a misnomer. And then that became Revenge of the Sith for Episode 3. But Khan is definitely going after revenge for what has happened. His world was destroyed. His wife was killed because of that. Many of his people died because of that, and they lived a life of horrible, horrible hardship because they were just forgotten on that world. Which always bothered me, by the way, that Captain Kirk would put them there and then not say anything to anyone. So when the planet was destroyed and the Reliant comes to check on the planet to find a planet with no life, wouldn't there have been something in the databanks about that? I don't know. It just always bothered me that he was forgotten there. And I guess it bothered him too.
If it was a different way, then you wouldn't have the movie. So
no, it's true. I mean,
it's that stupid meta thinking where it's obviously something happened to cover it up.
I think they maybe could have come up with something else that wouldn't have involved the destruction of a whole planet. And then it turns out they get there and, this is SETI Alpha 6, right? No, this is SETI Alpha 5. In other words, the planet you thought you left me on is the planet you thought was destroyed and you didn't care. You come here and you thought my planet was the one that blew up.
Nice.
But that fits, both, in my opinion, Khan and Magneto fit the actual definition of deeply resentful indignation or vengeance or punishment as a consequence of anger. Doesn't mean that they're yelling at people. There's a deeply resentful indignation, and this is a consequence of something deep-seated. And I think you see that both in Khan and in Magneto, and to me, that makes them better villains because they're not all over the place. And think about it, like Bane. One of my favorite parts of Dark Knight Rises is when the business guy comes in and is kind of bossing Bane around, and Bane basically puts his pinky on his shoulder and he goes, "Do you feel in control right now?" I mean, Bane's was extremely wrathful, but his demeanor is very calm, which
I don't see Bane as wrathful, though. I see Bane as at first I thought he was wrathful, and then I realized he's the henchman.
Yeah, he's a tool.
He's just the guy that's behind the person who has the wrath. The person that has the wrath is behind him, and that's Talia.
I don't think he's just totally a henchman, because otherwise I think he's his own man, because otherwise when she said, she gave him a command at the end of the movie and they're not to kill him or something. And he goes, I'm going to have to do it. I mean, so he's his own man. He deeply cares for her, I think he's an ideologue. I think he really believes in what he's doing. It just so happens that, they both have the same goal.
Well, I think his wrath comes, if he is an example of wrath, it comes from her wrath. And he's so empathetic to her and with her that it's her that he's wrapped up in and following.
Yeah.
All right, let's just do a couple more. How about this? The Skywalkers. Anakin, when his mother was killed.
Yeah.
And he goes out and kills the Sand People and has his little emotional breakdown in that room with Padme. But then I think a better example, and one that I like, is Luke. Luke spends a lot of Return of the Jedi choosing not to fight and choosing to just take it, and Vader and the Emperor are both like just trying to get under Luke's skin, The Emperor finally kind of gets to him when he mentions his friends, and he goes after the Emperor and starts a lightsaber battle, and then he's going to stop. And he decides he's not fighting. He's kind of hiding in the darkness. And that's where Darth Vader is searching. and says, "Oh,
sister, you have a sister."
And Luke goes nuts. He goes after Vader because he will not let Vader get his sister. I see that as an image of wrath. And then he stops himself when he realizes what he's doing. He realizes what he's becoming. And
we're going to have to put spoiler alert for all the things you just said. Gosh.
Well, it's 1984 that the movie came out. I find those two examples of wrath, the Anakin one, not as good as the Luke one. The Luke one is a good one, though, I think, because you see him cycle through and he's going to hold back. He's going to offer patience and forgiveness, and then he ends up stopping.
We usually, when we get to these, you know, seven deadly sins, we spend the majority of the time talking about the sin. It seems to be a little bit harder to find the positives. Do you guys find it difficult to find good examples of the opposite of wrath, or do you think this is an easier one to find?
I think it's a harder one to define the opposite of wrath. I think that what you're talking about with love or patience or forgiveness.
I like righteous, righteous justice, righteous vengeance,
righteous indignation.
Yeah.
Is that the opposite of wrath? I mean, the virtue is not righteous indignation.
I think it's the flip side of wrath. It's just like you have, for every sin, there could be something that's similar but has a different motivation. I think the complete opposite of wrath is, I would say, forgiveness, but forgiveness only really comes about out of love.
Yeah, I think you saying love, if you're talking about wrath as far as the sinful wrath, okay? Not the justified wrath,
not the righteous indignation.
But if you're talking about it as that just controlling anger and simmering hatred, then yeah. In fact, now that I use the word hatred along with that wrath, I think that love probably is the opposite. But if you're looking for an example of the opposite, it can't just be love. It can't just be, you know, because, you know, Joni loves Chachi. That's not the opposite of wrath.
Well, no, I mean,
you know, I think it has to be an example where someone deserves wrath. Someone deserves.
It would be grace or forgiveness.
Yeah.
Because if
grace, that's a good word for it.
Grace or forgiveness, because if wrath is deeply resentful indignation or punishment as a consequence of anger, then it'd have to be grace or forgiveness.
I think grace might be a even better example of the opposite.
Because then what it would do is, by grace, it's not even forgiveness is showing that there's wrong. Grace is actually, you know, for instance, if my wife upsets me, you know, and I let her know that she really kind of, she upset me at some point, which then she would, you know, could say, "Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. Would you forgive me?" And that would be me forgiving. However, if she does something and I have a disposition of grace going, you know, it's okay, I'm thinking the best anyways, you don't have to apologize, it's not that big of a deal, my disposition is gracious, and I would consider that to be the opposite of holding a deeply resentful indignation.
Yeah. So I had a hard time finding opposites just because I had a hard time defining opposite. I did write down Jedi as an opposite because of what a Jedi from the original trilogy that I believed a Jedi was supposed to stand for, which is, you know, nobility and not allowing your anger to control you.
Right.
And not stepping into the cave and facing Darth Vader and cutting him down, but stepping into the cave and facing Darth Vader with another response.
Or mercy.
Mercy, yeah.
Probably mercy more than grace.
Yeah, mercy seems to fit.
Because grace is getting something you don't deserve. Mercy is not getting
what
the
you
bad
do
thing that you do deserve. So
mercy would, yeah.
And that comes down to, you know, that mercy comes down to how many times you see at the end of the movie where the bad guy is totally at the mercy of the good guy. And yeah. The good guy's about to pull the trigger. But then his buddy says, no, because if you do that, you'll become just as bad as he is. And so he drops the gun and turns away. Right.
Except what was that one episode where he shoots him anyway? Oh, what was that show? And then that's happened a couple times, but I'm trying to remember. Unforgiven comes to mind, but
I'm sure it's happened. But
sounds like Serenity.
Yeah, sounds like something Mal would do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think mercy. Good. We've puzzled through this over, you know, on, you know, in real time. And so, yeah, in real time, everyone, you have found us discover what we believe to be the opposite of wrath. And if you disagree with us, let us know, because you can just totally throw everything we talked about in disarray.
Yeah, there you go.
So let's talk about some of the, unless you guys have some more examples, do you?
The only other one I had was the Red Lantern Corps.
Ooh, good one. Yeah. Cause
and, you know, that was all wrath. It was all about wrath, but it's interesting because they had, you know, seven colors, and I think they did the black lanterns, and I don't know, white lanterns or something, but they sort of loosely based it on the colors and the virtues and vices for their, you know, choosing, you know, what goes with what color. So, you know, red being, you know, wrath, the wrathful, and Atrocitus was the big bad guy there, the, you know, prime mover of that whole thing, the one mm-hmm. that created the Red Lantern battery. And then just seeing, it was interesting because all of a sudden you didn't just have this willpower-based Green Lantern. You started to have all these different ways that you could slice that Green Lantern, you know, all the different angles you could come at him. Instead of just the yellow ring, now you had, you know, all these different rings and all these different, you know, things going on. And I think it broadened the character of Green Lantern to a great extent.
Well, what do you guys, now that we've defined mercy as being the opposite, at least in our opinions, uh-huh. of wrath, what are some of the best examples that you've seen in fantasy sci-fi?
Well, I see that in Luke and Darth Vader.
Yeah, that was my first one too.
Just because we just talked about that. You know, honestly, Space Seed from the Star Trek, you know, the first appearance of Khan mm-hmm. in the original series, they show Khan mercy. They let yeah. him leave, even though he has wronged them. They let yeah. him have his world and let him go and be Khan. And tame a planet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another example, I guess, of mercy.
I would say one is, a couple. One, Gandalf, and then Frodo afterwards is on Gollum.
Absolutely, great example.
Again, one of my favorite quotes is, you know, I can't remember what Gandalf says, this really cool piece of wisdom about Gollum. And then he said that I still believe he has a role to play. Now, even though they both give him mercy, he still ends up doing some stupid stuff, but
right.
that stupid stuff ended up being a huge asset in the long run.
As far as other examples of mercy, Superman and Lex Luthor, he lets Luthor live every time, even though Luthor goes off and does terrible, evil things afterward again.
Batman and the Joker, except for killing Joke, of course, which is
top. But it's a great example. Well, man, I don't know if it's a great example, but you've got that example in Dark Knight Returns, where he's fighting Joker in the Tunnel of Love, and he has to choose: am I going to kill him this time or not? And I've not killed him so many times. I don't want to give that away, though, because that's one of the greatest comeuppances I think. The end of that scene with Joker is a great ending. Very dark, bleak ending. But
very dark, very bleak.
I would say another sign of mercy is actually in Toy Story when, you know, Woody's done some really dumb things and they forgive him for doing the things that he did with Buzz.
Yeah, you know, originally I've seen some of the animatics for the original, well, as they were developing the story. And Woody was meant to be a jerk in that. And more, like, the things happening to Buzz were actually more because Woody was being very proactive to cause problems for Buzz. And I like that they made it, like, tempered a little bit. But yeah, Buzz and Woody's relationship is a great example of just a good friendship that could have become marked by wrath and by vengeance.
Yeah.
I think it could be a great Elseworlds Toy Story story.
Nice.
Where, yeah, Buzz just goes out for vengeance against Woody.
Yeah.
He kind of does at first, anyway. Well, let's look into some of the spiritual and scriptural teachings about wrath. There's a lot about anger and wrath in the Bible. I think a lot of it has to do with controlling your anger. And, you know, things in Proverbs. Proverbs 29:11, a fool gives vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Proverbs 16:32, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who is better than he who takes a city. Proverbs 22:24, make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man. It's just a lot of it is, I think, because wrath focuses itself on other people. And these kind of scriptures are kind of talking about, you know, how you respond to people. Don't respond to people in wrath, but respond to people quietly and carefully.
Yeah. And again, it's bringing in that mercy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just giving the benefit of the doubt, you know, just sort of, I mean, when I deal with people and something goes wrong and, you know, I'm offended or something like that, I just say, well, you know, it could be anything. Just extend that little bit of mercy, and most of the time, you know, it covers over a lot of wrath. You know, you could just you just get really dark and really bitter and really bleak inside when you let it sit there, and most of the time it's for absolutely no reason. You know, you find out later, oh, well, I'm sorry, I just assumed you were turning left instead of you were turning right, and it's just something simple, and that's what you're holding on to, really, that's the thing that's going to define you from now on. You know, let it go.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's one of those things that if you notice, most righteous anger situations are not when you're trying to defend yourself, but when you're trying to defend other people. And I think that when you're trying to defend yourself, you have selfish interests. But for instance, if you know, if we're walking down the street and we see these thugs beating up an old woman, you know, to have righteous anger is because we are wanting to protect someone else. And so I think that from a spiritual perspective, you know, to be able to look at it and go, you know, that's why we should have a disposition of mercy, especially in offenses towards ourselves. That's easier said than done. But most righteous, some people get self-righteous in protecting themselves. You know, that one, we're angrier than heck and we're not going to take it anymore. You know, sometimes we have this kind of selfish interest. But the truth is real righteous indignation is when we're trying to protect other people.
Yeah.
I agree.
Did you read Psalm 37:8?
I did not.
That's a good one. Refrain from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not yourself. It tends only to evil. It's just,
that's exactly what Dr. Jace was saying.
Yeah, don't even get angry. You know,
I mean, well, I have a friend who I hold in high esteem, especially in theological things, and he was sharing how in things of ministry, especially when it comes to conflict, especially when it comes to issues regarding yourself, is to have, how does he say it? He says to have a healthy dispassion. That's not apathy, but that you don't get overly excited that when things go wrong or someone says something, to not get impassioned, you know, because that leads to arguments. To have a healthy dispassion. That is not disinterest nor apathy, but it's almost kind of a death of the flesh to react and defend oneself.
Yeah, I for me myself, I had that all day today where I was just dealing with tech people on the phone trying to figure out internet problems.
Yeah.
Is there anything that gets you more angry, or gets me more angry, I guess, than computer answering services? I just want to scream because there's nothing there. It's like a rock. A rock falls on your foot. What are you going to do? Yell at the rock?
Yeah.
No. You want to yell at who threw it there, but what's just gravity that pulled it there?
What's even worse? Gravity? What's even worse is the rock talks back to you.
Yeah.
It says, I'm sorry. It's like, how can you be sorry? You're a rock. How can you be sorry? You're an answering machine. You have no I and you have no sorry. There's no that phrase that means nothing coming from you.
You know, we were talking about this in church actually on Sunday. We were talking about forgiveness and being sorry. And an example I gave them was the example of when you do a scratch-off game and, you know, like that thing from McDonald's where you peel off the cup or whatever and it says, sorry, you're not a winner. Like, you're not sorry. Who's sorry? Yeah. You're not sorry that I didn't win.
There's no sorrow.
You don't know who I am. You don't care.
The people putting together these cards aren't like, oh, boy, this guy's not going to win.
Well, hey, guys, I think this goes to our personal application section because it sounds like you guys have this undercurrent thing. If you don't deal with it, you're going to become wrathful. So
yeah, no, I did. It was not an undercurrent today. It was there. It was an overcurrent.
Yeah.
So how can you apply the virtue and minimize the deadly sin here?
Well, you know, and I'm going to have to look up the name. I'm also going to cut this out. What's her name? Kathy? Yeah, Kathy. Kathy Longsinger from Gideon. I met her at the Gideon 2 years ago, and she does Quiet Answer or Gentle Answer Ministries. I can't remember which it is, but it's and talking with her a couple years ago, that stuck in my head, where basically it's the, you know, a gentle answer turns away wrath. That is something that I've worked so hard, and my wife has also started applying it too when we deal with our kids, is just to try and remember when we get angry, a gentle answer. Because really, I mean, you know, the whole idea of yelling at your kids, you know, you feel like, well, I've got to get them to hear, but you're flying off the handle. And what are they hearing? They're hearing wrath. They're hearing anger. And it's just when you stop and make yourself stop and be, you know, like some of these verses we're saying where you're, you know, a soft answer turns away wrath, or in James where it says, be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger.
Yeah.
You know, those are the kind of things where, with as far as personal application, it is not easy, especially when you've been wronged. And that's
just, well, I have a funny story to sort of goes along with it. And over the weekend, I don't know why, but my wife thought I was sort of in a bad mood. And then she was saying, you know, kids, you know, don't bother daddy. He's, you know, he's in a bad mood. And I said, why do you think I'm in a bad mood? And she's like, well, I don't know. You were, you know, sort of, I don't know, kind of, you know, in a bad. And I said, I'm not in a bad mood. She's like, are you sure? And I'm like, look, I'm really not in a bad mood. And I'm thinking to myself, how do I really?
I think the chewing nails, Steve, usually is an indicator that you're upset.
But I was like, how do I get around this? And I said, you know what? And then I just pretended. I said, you know what? I am in a bad mood, but the only way to get it out of me is to hug it out of me. And then one of my kids came over and like, you know, squeeze me. I'm like, no, oh no, it's coming out of me. And then I said, oh no, it's all out of me now. I hope you're happy, because I am. And it just turned everything around. We had a really good, you know, rest of the night. And I wasn't in a bad mood, but you know, it quickly could have turned that. I could have just been like, well, fine. You want me in a bad mood? Oh, you see a bad mood. You know?
There's a man named Pat Hurley. And if you, any of our listeners who are from the Chicagoland area, you'll recognize Pat Hurley as the announcer from the Bozo Show, but he's also a Christian stand-up comedian. And I bought a couple of his tapes because he spoke at a youth conference I was at, and he had a routine in one of his tapes where it was a soap opera, and this man who's sitting there by himself, and the lady comes in, and she's, what's wrong? Something bothering you? No, nothing's bothering you. I'm sure something's bothering you. No, nothing's bothering you. There's something wrong. There's got to be something wrong. There's nothing wrong, okay? See? You're mad.
Is the Bozo Show still going on?
Oh, no.
Oh, I was going to say, wow.
Well, it might be in some places. I mean, the Bozo Show in Chicago is not...
It's not live. It's not like they're producing more of them.
No, it's very much dead, because I think Bozo died a couple times.
But don't they, I mean, don't people still dress up as Bozo and do appearances and stuff?
It might be. But when I was a child, Pat Hurley was the announcer from the Bozo Show. Okay. And so, like, I'm assuming, like, Tom Holstie would know about Pat Hurley just because he knows about the Bozo Show. My dad went to the Bozo Show when he was a kid. He was in the audience. He didn't get to play the grand prize game or anything. But
I used to watch the Bozo Show.
Yeah, but you might have been watching the Chicago one, but there were other Bozos. Because I went camping.
The one I watched was Chicago.
What?
The one I watched was Chicago.
Okay. When I went camping one time, I was watching TV on a Saturday morning, and the Bozo Show came on, and it was a different guy wearing a different costume. He was in red instead of blue. And I think that they like franchised Bozo across the nation. But the Chicago one is the...
Yeah, the one I remember, he was wearing blue, and he had huge red hair that flared out like a bowl.
And then there was Cookie... And there was the joke telling dog. And
anyways, personal applications.
So I do have one last thing a note that I made here, and that is I find it very unfortunate in some ways that people so often are wanting to use the example of Jesus in the temple as a justification for flying off the handle and getting angry.
Right.
And having wrath. And so, this happens a lot too, where, you know, because Jesus, when he talked to Pharisees, he called them a brood of vipers, you know, and he used clever wordplay and slightly veiled insults. And so people then say, well, I can do that because Jesus did it. And I keep thinking to myself, well, he's Jesus and he's really good at that kind of thing. And I don't think you quite are, you know, you're not Jesus for sure. But, you know, using Jesus in the temple as an example of righteous indignation and rightful wrath is one thing. But then to use it as a justification for just acting out on your own impulses.
Yeah, you can take it to the logical conclusion of, you know, God did genocidal things back in the Old Testament, so obviously I can do that.
Well, that's, you know, that's where people take it out of context, because that's where we're talking about righteous indignation, where Jesus went off on people, even with, you know, whenever he was confrontational, usually it was against pious religious leaders who were taking advantage of people and who were basically insulting the house of God. That is different than just going off on anybody that you want to because they're doing something wrong.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of like when people, you know, the Bible says that we're going to be, you know, people are going to come after us because of our faith. Well, then, you know, or persecuted. And then all of a sudden, people at work are persecuting them, and they go, oh, I'm being persecuted for Christ. No, it's because you don't show up on time. And because when you're doing work, you're, you know, you're in your corner praying and not answering the phone and doing your job. That's not the same as being persecuted. So they're taking it completely out of context.
Well, maybe you are being persecuted, but you're being persecuted for being lazy.
That's exactly it. Yeah. You can't you might be a jerk. If people persecute you because you're a jerk, it's not because of your faith. In fact, it's probably in spite of it.
Yep.
All right. Well.
Okay, guys, I take the hint.
Well, if you have any examples you can think of, gentle listeners, then please send them to us. You can send emails to podcast@strangersandaliens.com, or you can comment on the blog post or comment on our Facebook post about this episode. But I think this is pretty much about it for Wrath. You guys have any last final words about Wrath or its opposite, Mercy, which we figured out in real time? Right before your eyes.
I have something about mercy. Let me see if I can get this real quick.
We didn't open the Book of Lewis. And part of that was because there weren't any real good quotes about wrath from him that I could find. I did find an interesting one from Till We Have Faces.
The Book of Lewis.
That's a good thing.
Where she says, "My anger protected me only for a short time. Anger wearies itself out, and truth comes in." That was a good quote.
Nice. I wanted to quote The Merchant of Venice.
Okay.
When Portia says, "The quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that takes."
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And sort of reversing that, wrath is twice cursed. You know, it curses the person that the wrath is going on to. And, you know, it, like I said, after wrath, what? You know, what do you do when the thing that defines your life is not there anymore? You know, what do? Join the brute squad? You know? So
you are the brute squad.
But you know, the wrath is that thing that takes away twice, and mercy is that thing that gives twice.
Dr. Jace, any last words about wrath or mercy?
Wrath bad, mercy good.
That's good enough for me. So thank you for listening, everyone. And would you guys care to give your farewell? Without saying mine.
Adios.
Hi. Bye.
And Godspeed. That's it.
You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Steve MacDonald, and Dr. Jace O'Neill. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. Please join in the conversation by visiting our website, strangersandaliens.com, where you will find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also email us directly at podcast@strangersandaliens.com or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangers. Or you can leave us a voicemail on the Strangers and Aliens hotline. Just call 1-804-37-ALIEN and leave your message. And once again, thanks for listening.
You just keep missing the mark.